Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret, and that's the distinctive sound of the Milwaukee band Violent Femmes. Since forming in 1980, the band continues to be one of Wisconsin's most successful musical groups ever. With a stripped-down sound heard on hits like Add It Up and this one, Blister in the Sun, the trio is considered to be one of the most influential alternative rock bands of the 1980s and 90s. Original members Brian Ritchie and Gordon Gano have gotten the band back together without original drummer Victor DiLorenzo. They're playing a show this weekend in Milwaukee. Joining us now to talk about the band's career is bassist Brian Ritchie. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, you are coming back, playing a show in Wisconsin. You've played all over the world. Is there still something special about coming back home and playing a show here?
Well, you know, considering our long history and how many gigs we've done there, it's always special to come back. And it happens less frequently now, so those points get bigger and bigger than they were in the past, where we might have played. Well, in the early years, we played hundreds of gigs in a year just in Milwaukee, and now we do once a year or once every few years. So that's a big deal.
Well, take us back to those early days before the first album hit it big. What was it like playing around Milwaukee, literally on the sidewalks in Milwaukee?
Well, we were on the sidewalks because the clubs didn't want anything to do with us. They didn't even think that we were not even related to rock music. So their idea of rock and roll was whatever the local bands were doing, which is mainly like kind of boogie music, southern type boogie rock. And, you know, it was a very backwards musical scene. So we were getting, and even the punk scene didn't really take us too seriously because we were playing acoustic instruments and they thought of us as folk. So we had no identity within the culture, but then we were playing out on the street as a result of being kicked out of a club when we tried to audition. We were so dejected that we went to play for the people waiting in line for the Pretenders concert. And the Pretenders heard us and invited us to open up the show because they loved us. And, that kind of, well, it vindicated us, at least to ourselves, to know that we were on the right track. We knew we were, but it was good to see somebody from the outside of that little swamp, recognizing us.
Well, now, when I listen back to a lot of music in that era, I think, oh, that was okay, but it's very much of that time. You'd never hear that synthesizer patch anywhere else or whatever. Do you think because you played those acoustic instruments, your music had more staying power, as I think it does?
Yes, Rob, and that was actually a conscious decision on our part, which turns out to have been prophetic, you know, since I'm speaking to you now 35 years later. We knew that that stuff wasn't going to last, and we decided intentionally to make recordings and to take a musical direction that was part of the continuum of American music and of rock music, not even just rock, but we also had these strong kind of jazz impulses to improvise and blues and folk and bluegrass music. So we decided intentionally not to do that. In fact, we were offered a record deal from a major label for a lot of money after we made the first album. They said, oh, this is a good demo. Now let's make an album. And they wanted us to put those keyboards, like you mentioned, on there and work with a producer and probably use a drum machine and do all that stuff. And we just said, no, this is the music. This is the way we want to be represented, and we wouldn't back down. Which meant that we had to go with an independent label, but in the long term, it also meant that we had some credibility.
Well, tell us about recording that first album, and you recorded it at Castle Studios in Lake Geneva?
Yeah, which was a former Playboy Club, and it was an experience. We drove every day. We slept in the studio. We hardly had any money. We were financing it ourselves, and back in those days, you just didn't make an album lightly. I mean, now everybody can make it on their Pro Tools unit on their computer in their bedroom. You know, like my friend Gauthier had a number one hit single all over the world with something that he recorded on a computer in his parents' house or something. So it's a different story than it was then. Back then, going into the studio was a commitment. And we took it pretty seriously, so we planned that album quite a bit beforehand, even down to the point of making the order before we made the album and demoing the entire album. So there's like a facsimile of the album that we did on just a four-track machine. Some of that stuff came out later when we reissued the album in extended form.
And as you said, this was punk, folk, country, jazz, rock influenced. And a lot of times when things cross boundaries, cross categories, nobody ends up getting into it. This is the opposite. This ended up being one of the defining albums of the time. Did you have any idea when you put the wrapper on this that it was going to do so well?
We knew that it was going to be considered a classic by somebody. little did we know that it would be the masses. We thought of ourselves more in line with artists like maybe back in those days, like Television or Patti Smith. You know, at the commercial end of the spectrum, we would have considered ourselves in line with the Ramones, but not even that. So we didn't know that it was going to become so popular. You know, like right now, for example, we're managed by Tom Sarig, who was Lou Reed's manager. And, you know, he points out to us that we sold a lot more records than the Velvet Underground did. So the music we were listening to and aspired to was probably more niche than what we ended up being.
Talking to Brian Ritchie with the Violent Femmes, coming back to Wisconsin for a show this weekend. And, Brian, I want to fast forward. I think a lot of your fans were excited to know that you were playing again, doing shows again. Surprised probably to know that you had new music come out. So you got into the studio literally New Year's Eve last year. What got you back into the studio to record after a long hiatus?
It was an odd story. You know, we had an extended period. Well, there were about 12 or 13 years when we didn't record. And when we were together and we didn't record, or we didn't record because we were split up. So even when we were still together, we didn't record for quite some time, and I think it was mainly Gordon had lost his inspiration. Or maybe he lost the will to continually put out music that people, you know, would sometimes refer to the first album, or something. Oh, this isn't as good as the first album. If you actually listen to a lot of our stuff, there's quite a bit of good material there, and I think he got sick of being compared always to the first album. But now he seems to be over it, and he wants to do recording. So I was hesitant to do that because I knew that it could lead to various problems, you know, whether if people don't accept it or if we get disappointed by the response. But now the entire record industry has collapsed, so we're actually right back where we started, which is make the music just because we want to and because we have something to say. And the production on the record is even probably even more primitive than what we did on the first album. It's like even liver than that and even more ambient in the studio, like musicians in a room playing together, similar to a jazz recording. And it's kind of come full circle for us.
One thing that strikes me listening to these, you mentioned, you know, you resisted the urge to, or the imperative to put keyboards and all sorts of fancy stuff over it. But over the years, you've played with horn players, the horns of Dilemma, and there's a lot of great, I'm a sax player, a lot of great bass saxophone going throughout, I think, almost the whole four tracks. So horns did fit the music somehow.
Well, that's because we're really into the blues and jazz mentality. We, as listeners, we listen more to jazz probably than anything else. So to us, a saxophone is not like an exotic instrument. Like some people think when they listen to, for example, the Bruce Springsteen or Roxy Music, you know, the rare bands that had a saxophone player, that, oh, wow, that sax is an exotic instrument. For us, it's an everyday thing. And we love the saxophone. That guy who's playing on the recording, Blaze Garza, he's 25 years old. He's been playing with us since he was 14. And he was a fan of ours since he was about 9. And now we also have a new drummer, Brian Biglione, who was with Dresden Dolls, who were heavily influenced by us. So we've got this interesting kind of dynamic going where we've got young people coming into the band, but they're not coming into the band like, oh, let's go find some talented young people to make ourselves sound good. It's more like they're fans. They really understand the music because they've been listening to it for their whole life, you know. And when they come into the band and play with us, they know exactly how it's supposed to be because they're actually deep fans.
Now, for the band, you've had ups and downs, you and Gordon, breakups, a lawsuit in there somewhere. When you get back together and play, is it just a, you know, magical, oh, all that's behind us and we're playing music again? Or does it take some work to get into that zone where you can make music together again?
Well, when we got back together for Coachella, it was pretty comfortable for me and Gordon. We just picked up. Not where we left off, but, you know, in a better space than where we left off because we wanted to do it. So, and the music is very natural. I mean, that's one of the good things about having this kind of rough approach that we have. It doesn't require a huge amount of rehearsal nor planning nor arguing about what it's supposed to sound like. We know what it's supposed to sound like, and we just go for it, and we get there very quickly. So the music is always easy. You know, it's best when everybody, as individuals, are in a good frame of mind and healthy and positive. So that's where Gordon and I found ourselves when we got back together again.
So you're touring. You have this new 4-song release. Any more recordings coming up?
In fact, we recorded a bunch of songs in Brooklyn, and we also have been recording in Milwaukee, and we've got about 9 of them in the can right now. So we brought along recording gear on the tour, and we'll find some time on the tour to record, maybe in the bus or hotel room or something, and finish out the album and probably have it out early next year.
All right, Brian, have a great return show to Milwaukee, and good luck with the new album.
Really looking forward to it. Thanks, Rob.
That was Brian Ritchie, bassist for Violent Femmes. You can catch them live this Saturday at the BMO Harris Pavilion in Milwaukee. Coming up, we'll learn about the benefits of reading, the maybe psychological benefits of reading from one of the world's first bibliotherapists. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is off today. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Costing me shaming all the world, but then she like another guy. I fall down dead, she never see the time.